some miracle nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As we sit together on an empty stage and perform for one another silently. Well, occasionally we say things. I mean, you have to, there's dialogue always, and you might respond. But essentially, we're sitting together quietly. And I'm talking for the whole hour, though. I will talk.
Oh, don't shut off the radio. It's too soon. I haven't even said what I'm going to do. Expectations are a big part of disappointment and satisfaction. So there's no way at this point to assess whether what you're listening to or what you're about to listening to be to listen for you is any good. And I know that we're off to a rough start there because I said a sentence that didn't have the traditional word order really in it. I'm so sorry. One of the reasons that I'm speaking like this is because I'm trying to draw attention to performance itself as a way of liberating oneself. Now, I started on radio just as a community sort of person going on there helping people sell items that they couldn't get rid of. Say maybe you had a rooster or a VCR and you wanted to get rid of both of them. Say, I'll make you a deal on both of them together. And one of them has been caponized, and I won't tell you which one, but it's the tape machine and it's missing the little capstan. And so is the chicken. It's not a chicken, though. It's a rooster. And I would sell these things to people, or rather, I would hook them up. I was sort of a broker who didn't get a fee. It's just free brokering on the radio. And then I discovered that people were listening for other reasons than just wanting to trade or all. And then I started sharing my ideas about what I thought the colon was. I didn't realize people had figured it out already. Isn't that funny, with philosophy or anything? Say, here's what I think's going on. But that had been solved already. But I was still contributing to the conversation, just the one that had been concluded already. And that's happened to me at parties as well, so it wasn't anything unusual or new to me. And then I realized that radio itself was a sort of performance space, and you could really do anything there. It was like an empty stage. And on that empty stage, what would you put there?
Tomato.
Maybe a tomato.
And then have someone pretend that they're talking, and then that's the tomato talking.
You could do that. There's so many things, though. If you started to list them right now, we'd be here forever, because monkeys with 10,000 typewriters have already done that in another universe. And it's ponderous. No one wants to read it. But we're going to put on stage, well, anything. But really, the idea of putting things on stage. Performance. Now, I'm delivering to you a certain type of performance. And that is an oral one. It's oral on my part. And it's aural on your part. It's like Errol and Errol. If you've known somebody named E-A-R-L or E-R-R-O-L, it's just like that. One means your ear hole, the other means your pie hole.
So I put pie in my ears.
I don't know what to tell you then. But this is just for folks, most folks, then I should say that. So this is a sort of stage, and I am...
Are you a performer?
Am I? I have a pet peeve. Actually, my pet peeve died. Well, my dog died. I'll get into that in a minute. But I still have this pet peeve. It won't die, unfortunately. And that is when people refer to their voice as an instrument. Say, this is my instrument. Hardy, you doing some jazz with that voice instrument? Yeah. Well, here's why I don't think it's an instrument. I'm going to list the reasons why. If you leave it in
You can't leave it in a case over the summer and it gets all moldy. That stuff grows in it. And that is part of having an instrument. Two, the airline can't break it in the same way. They can break your voice maybe because you're screaming like, where's your manager or something like that, or when am I going to leave? But they don't just throw it on the ground like that. A lot of airlines, if they know you have like, is that a very old cello? Yeah, they'll just drop it out of the plane in flight for you. And you say, why would you do that? And they would say, why not? Why not do that? And I don't know why. I think it's because airlines are so great, they don't want us to become too attached. And I've thought that was the answer to all. You know, I have comedians for years that say, have you seen this flying? Have you seen this? Have you seen this airplane food? Have you seen this? And now it's, have you seen the people on planes? Have you seen this? And I think all this negativity stems from the fact that air travel, international air travel, has changed the world. Now we can all get where we're going, say, I need some. I love Italian leather. I'm going to go to Italy and get some. And, you know, then I think that airlines and airplanes would become too much in awe and praise of them, say these things, and too deferential, and they're trying to disabuse us of this psychologically detrimental worship. And I believe that that's amazing how self-aware the airlines. Sometimes they'll just make defective planes and everything, which is next level, and I'm not sure I approve of that. And we can get into that about, you know, that seems like utilitarian. And another thing that disturbs me is any trolley problem, because it's just all paradoxes like that. And you'll notice this, all moral paradoxes, like where the trolley is going to either run over five people or two people. They all give you they're all false decisions, false choices. And they're pointing you in a direction, in an ethical direction. They're saying something about it. They're already figured out human worth and all, and vis-a-vis you and everything like that. It's a whole worldview wrapped up in a BS question. And so it's always good when you encounter them to just say, well, to do some third choice. They hate that. You know, well, I wouldn't have trolleys. There are no trolleys. And it doesn't matter because it's all a dream. Or those two, you know, it's something like that. Those two people, they want to be there. Well, who knows? That's none of that is absurd, because all that's pertinent. And it isn't figured in their silly scenario. You've turned out. Now I think somebody has shut it off because they said, well, first of all, I didn't shut it off because I don't like you. I'm not taking it personally. If you wanted it to be a music show, and then I said my voice, in fact, is not music, then I have talked you out of staying. And I accept that. But I would like you to see things a little differently and understand that maybe we are in a scenario right now where you are the performer on stage and I'm talking you through it. I am the coach in your earpiece. This is Liberation Performance Art. Say, that expression, performance art, that's fraught, just like poetry, because there are people who are performance art TM, poetry TM, working in academia and everything, and they get really, poet is becoming is becoming like the word realtor. It's going to have a little trademark thing after it, and do we want that? We want it misused, as we want the word artist misused. Oh, my goodness. Can't quantify these things, right? You say, well, there's a thing called adjectives. Stick one on there. Say, put poet. You can't be. Stick an adjective on there, like bad poet or failed. But don't mess with the noun. Anybody can put that on themselves. Oh, you can label yourself. I do it with a spiritual dynamo, because I don't want to overthink the font. So get that label on there. lot of people spend a lot of time saying, well, that, but there has no, there's no serif on the L. I don't even know what's on an I. Doesn't matter. People are going to know what it means. No smoking. It doesn't say no smoke like that. So I think we'll be all right. I want to convince you in this short period of time, in the next 50 minutes, that performance art, and yes, the goofy kind where you move your body and say weird things, is actually going to be a source of liberating knowledge for you right now, something applicable that you can apply to your life, just like I've so many things you find out, like, but oh, I didn't, I, you know, I thought enemas. So I had no idea that they can't, that you could get different flavors and everything like that. Or, you know, I never used mouthwash before. And now I do. I'm turning you on to something like a life hack. Say, copper gloves. Yeah, they really help with your arthritis? No. But they come in flavors. Just about anything you can think of can be, get. You can buy it in a scented and unscented form. So I always ask, no matter what it is, and you don't, you think that's weird, but you can totally get it unscented, like cars. Say, I prefer if you don't spray it with the artificial new car smell. And they go, okay, because that's the thing. That's a real thing. Because cars, right off the assembly line, smell like a combination of cologne and metal. And that's not desirable to people. So I'd like something closer to plastic fumes. Same. And nothing, you know, new carpet smell is wonderful. I know they tell you you should open the windows and run a fan and everything. But I think that Glade ought to make an air freshener like that. All the smells that emanate off of new furniture. I was caught in the, I had the terrifying experience. I got to share this with you before I go on, because I know this is a cliche. So I'm delivering it to you just like let's say I just took my first plane flight and I found out, airplane food or cookies, peanuts, I don't know what. And now I'm pointing it out and you go, that's tired. Be that as it may, I had never in my life been in an IKEA. And I was just in one. And I got to tell you, if you have my same, whatever it is, neurological propensity or whatever, don't go to the lower area. Don't go. Like, go up, the showroom's fun. But don't go down, and they'll say, go down into the warehouse now. There's no way out. They don't let you out. And it's, seeing the signs are like seeing a faint blaze on a woodland trail. They've made it so high. Is that an exit sign? I don't know. It's just like, it could be a schmear on the wall or something. And it took me forever, and I was panicking, and I'm starting looking at those doors that say alarm will sound. And I go, well, the alarm's, I'm about to sound one that's more shrill. It's me. It's my scream, my panicked screams of a trapped rodent, because that's how I felt. And it's nothing. I don't blame the store, other than I blame them because they did it on purpose, clearly. But it didn't make me want to buy anything. It made me want to chew my way through something. And so I'm just pointing that out. I don't know. I know they're got meatballs. Well, they should have put them out there. I would have, if there had been snacks on the way, I would have stopped and everything. Everything is backwards. It's not a dig on Sweden. Man, I like Eggstone as much as the next person. But, you know, and lingonberries or whatever the house have, I don't know, the cardigans. But, gosh almighty, that store was confusing to me. And I know that's quaint, and you're going to like, those were sitcom jokes 20 years ago. I'd never been in one. I don't know. It wasn't just now. If I should go back and watch them, I'll laugh again, like it's fresh. It's like maybe I just now read about President Garfield. So all those old Garfield jokes they used to tell are now not the cat, but the president. Well, was the cat making a reference? If it is, I'm going to get it after reading that wonderful biography by Shemp Davis, The Garfield Years. Check out that beard or something like that. This is a nice, it's history. But also you feel like you're there. Because you go, I have ignorant friends like that now. That sounds right. And they talk the same way. And I love a book if it's heavy, 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 transliterated dialect. Hey, go, like that or something. Like they talk back in then, and if you pronounce it out loud, you can hear how it might have sounded. I don't know if Shakespeare works that way. I've tried, but I had a teacher say, if you speak it out loud, it helps. And it does, but not anybody else, just you. So a lot of people prefer, say, could you read that Shakespeare silently? And I say to them, is this a dagger for me? The handbag for my hand? Come, that's a clutch bag. Say, have you not? And see you still. They're not. If I had a fatal vision, a figment of my mind, imagination as well as a real dagger. I don't really know the exact thing. I don't know that he depended on it. I know you say it's in verse and everything, but I think that was just his little notes. And then he really wanted the actors to improvise. And so I know I believe Curb Your Enthusiasm worked the same way. So Larry David, give everybody notes in iambic pentameter. But then he's like, just say that, roughly say that. And you'll notice My Dinner with Andre. If you have the script, doesn't matter, and you can buy the transcript, which is what they actually say in the movie, as opposed to the script they wrote out, it's two different things. It's similar, but, you know, it's not word for word. Whereas this show is read off a monitor and off a script that was printed and proofread and prepared by professional writers and editors who give me something to say and put these words in Hardy White's mouth. Hey, I'm Hardy White. Y'all like food in the mail? Well, I just discovered this great new place that a million piece of old vegetable. They will boil it themselves, and then put it in something like an envelope or a manila envelope, which is not a flavor. It's a place in the Philippines. And send it to you instead of you always dining out, which adds up. And they are now sponsors of this podcast. It's not a podcast, and there are no sponsors like that. I'm not asking you to drink a certain beverage. Although water, if you can get it, I don't know if it's still available. I drink water, keep you hydrated. I always carry with me a little strip, and it's got all these, you hold it up to your pee stream, and you see what color it is. It isn't really designed for that. It's actually for a pool when you're checking the pH, for see how much muriatic acid you need or something. But it works for pee. And I say, hey, I need more water. Or, hey, don't eat beets or something. You're going to freak yourself out. Something like that. I don't know. Oh, what's that? I don't know how you digest food. That's not important to me. I mean, you are. But that what you do inside like that, that's up to you. And I have no control over your thoughts or your intestinal gas or your stones, whether they have stones or not. And wouldn't it be lovely if you were gonna pass a stone, which is no fun. I've never had, and I know some say, oh, how hard, it's no joke. I know it's no joke. But would it have been better if it was a diamond? Say, I know this hurts, but you know, in a minute, I'm gonna be, you know, 50 grand richer. So I don't know whether that would make it better or probably not worse. But if people find out that you do that, they'll be, say, here, have more iced tea. And but so drink more water. If you pee diamonds, don't let anybody, never tell anyone, for gosh sakes, that the golden goose made this mistake by sharing their, they say, hey, I want to share this beautiful thing that happened to me. Aye, 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 don't do that. Then you will be held captive, I'm telling you. Don Quixote knew this. Don't, if you've got a magic helmet, you just tell everybody it's a shaving bowl, because otherwise you're going to have a security problem. And that's why I've never been a braggart. Because even if I had something to brag about, I'd be putting it at risk, wouldn't I? So I think it's best to put everything under a bushel. I put especially my electronics, because people come in the house and they go, just overturn bushels. And then they leave and say, oh, if they knew how much expensive equipment was really there. They just, I guess they just think it's corn cobs. It's just corn cobs under there or something. Or a trapped animal. Don't let it up. It's a rat. That it's not. So that a rat distortion pedal or box. Is that a thing? Did I make a good, there's a couple fellas laughing. I say fellas. If you're thinking right now that I have in any way digressed, I think you're wrong. I'm merely giving examples of performing. So there's different ways. We are performing all the time. One of the ways that we see performance in everyday life is when we have to create a distraction if we're running a scam or a robbery. And you might talk loudly or have a loud fake argument in public. And, you know, what are you saying here? Like that. And people start looking your way. And then your third accomplice can execute the crime. And that's performance in a way. How is that not acting or performing in a way? And that's something that we see in life every day. Another one is lying about losing the laundry ticket or something like that. You say, oh, yeah, little lies like that are acting. I was with friends all weekend. That's acting. And we do that. That's not what I'm talking about, though. I'm talking about a kind of performance art, a kind of expressing yourself that it feels almost weird or dangerous. I would never want to move in that way or make those sounds or anything like that. It's just, ugh. And if you had therapy and say, today we're going to pretend that we were a dying insect and make dying insect sounds, you'd say, well, this is really corny. I feel really stupid and self-conscious. I'm not sure that this, you know, I feel like I'm losing my dignity. And I feel like my dignity is an illusion. So to lose an illusion is doubly undignified. And I really don't want to roll around and go, blah, blah. I mean, as it is, I'm a sight to look at and all that and hear. And I just don't want to be more displeasing to the world. And then your instruction would say, well, what we are doing is a sort of self-annihilation. It's a exercise in putting all that away so that there isn't an issue of dignity, because you become unattached to your physical self, to appearances, all that. You put that away. Put it away. You can make any kind of voice you want, any kind of gesture. Now, you can do this without actually moving. I would never require you to do anything outside of this area that we have come to call the mind beach house or whatever, some kind of structure in your head, a place. In your imagination, you can eat all the candy and you'll still be in your imagination. And you imagine you feel sick. Here comes sick. In your imagination, it tastes like sweets coming up, back up. In your imagination, that's from Willy Wonka, and that took place in someone's imagination. Then they took it out of their imagination and put it on cellulose, and or cellulite, or whatever they used to call cinema, and
celluloid,
and showed it to the world. And now it's in your space, too. You don't have to keep it there, though. Sometimes if I have images that I don't like or things that got into my world or my the media suite of my mind palace, I will put it on an old 16-millimeter projector, and then I will stop it, and I will let the lamp of my memory burn a hole into the thin chemical membrane that contains the images, the memories, and sear it right out of there and get it out of there and purify my memory by forgetting some horrible thing that I like, some bad film or sitcom. Do you ever watch like a whole thing on Netflix and go, I wish I hadn't? I want that. If you really could like erase memories like in that movie that I can't remember because I have my memory erased, you know, they could do it, just certain things. And then I'd love some enhanced. Say, could you put up, make more vivid this really nice one that I remember? Or just like, could I retaste some things without burping? That's cheating. But I would love to say, can I taste that cake again that I once had that I remember it was so good? And but you got to be so careful with the way you word things, because you know you should suspect having your wishes granted, because you know it's impossible. And so when things happen to me, I always say after the fact, I wished for that. And then I feel like every wish I've had has come fulfilled. And what a heady feeling. Oh, my goodness. I feel like I'm on top of the world. I feel like the world is my stage. Am I the stage manager? Who's in charge of the stage here? I've walked into a theater. You're in the same one. It has an empty stage. I would like to talk to whoever is in charge. Now, is that the owner of the theater? Is that the stage manager? Is that the director of the upcoming play? Is it the beloved theater cat that wanders the halls here? Everybody loves Ruffles. Ruffles? Pringles. Pringles? Chippy? I forget his name. It had something to do with crisps. What was that cat's name? He lived in the theater for years. He was in every play. Everybody would sort of ad-lib a line, you know, yay, yonder, here comes the cat, forsooth, and stuff like that, because the cat would wander across the stage and there's nothing they could do to stop it. And it was a Snack Feud Bugles. I'm just going to name snack foods here for a while because I don't remember it. Charles? There was the Charles chips, but Charles, that's the first thing I'm going to remember, isn't going to be potato chips. Lay's? That's not a cat's name. Gosh, I just don't know. Ootses? I give up. He was Wriggles. That's not even a chip. Wriggles is his name. I don't know where I got chips. Isn't that funny how the human memory works? Wriggles. So Wriggles was this cat who lived in the theater of your mind right about now. And I actually didn't recollect the name. I just made it up. But I made it seem like I remembered it. That's part of the play we're writing. And we are writing one together. You didn't realize that, did you? I thought you said it was all written out. No, I didn't. I made that up. I've done that before, where it seems as if I'm reading. But maybe I am. Maybe I'm reading something that I am right now writing. And that's why sometimes I pause, because I just don't have the right word yet. Or I wait for the automatic typing program to catch up. And so I speak these words into the auto script translator poser. That's going to be tough, that one, when you make sounds like that. My mother likes the speech-to-text feature on her phone and uses it to create Dada poetry. And I think it's lovely. And I'm not exactly sure when she needs help or when, you know, she really is describing some beautiful, strange hallucination. that she's having artistically. I'm inclined to believe that's not it, but I don't want to always be rushing over there, you know, and say, oh, mother said something about melting clocks. I don't know whether she just misspelled, you know, blood pressure crisis or something like that, and I'm not going to worry about it right now. I am going to think about just the moment that we're in, that it's a stage, and that expectations are going to be the enemy. And I think I've already ruined things because I think I may have hinted about what's going on. And if that's the case, I gave away the plan. And if that's the case, you created an expectation. And if that's the case, I may have failed at it. But you see, if I make the expectation impossible to grasp, if I say I am doing an art form that you're not familiar with, and every time it seems like you are, you're wrong, then I wouldn't be breaking any rules. I wouldn't be doing anything wrong, because I would never not conform to your expectations, because they would all be happening after the fact. And that's the way it should be. Yes, I meant to do that. Everything I'm doing, I meant to do. I have a plan, and you're coming with me. And first of all, you'll notice that the show has a title. Now, how could the show have a title if it didn't have a theme? And how could it have a theme if it's just nonsense? And even if it was rambling, let's say that an idea or a show or a story is a little tree stand. It's a patch of forest. Pretty big, though. Big enough to get lost in. And we walk in on a path. And then, without using our compass or having any map, we make a right turn, and the next fork we make a left, then we kind of go this way and that, and we wander. Now, is it complete, utter chaos? We're still following paths. It's still a confined area. We're still going to get out of it, and every time we take a turn, you learn something new about the forest. It's impossible to explore it in an orderly way and have it be interesting. Oh, that's when I go into museums. I have to jump around. If I went in order of paintings, I'd burn out in like 10 paintings. So I run from one to the other. And I get to explore more of the museum that way. I'm actually physically in more of it, because I'm not trying to do things in an orderly way. Oh, bless everyone who has a podcast. And that podcast has a purpose other than interviewing people. Those are terribly, wonderfully chaotic and rambly. I appreciate that. And people have great stories, especially celebrities, because they often have stories about other celebrities. And that's just a wonderful self-contained world of the imagination. And I love any kind of parasocial club where we all can just be friends of strangers like that who do interesting things. Not like us poor schlubs, right? What do we do? Well, I'm not sure that my life is particularly objectively interesting, because a lot of it is internal, and I'm not willing to share, and also no one's expressed a real interest. I'm doing it a little bit right now, though, and I really welcome you in. It's the place is a mess. But if you want to come in and have a look around, I would just like to say that it follows all the rules of the human skull, in though there are no right angles in here. It was Saarinen designed this in the 50s before he died, and it's called a skull. And I keep everything in it. And it's difficult to hang things on the wall because of the curves, but I just think I love its lines. And I can get some thinking done in here. And I find that of all the places in the universe, the place that I get the most thinking done is the inside of my skull. And I don't know about you. I don't know what's in there. What's in your closet? Remember that? That's in one of those ads on TV. So a fellow holds up and goes, "What's in your closet?" So I don't know. What do you mean? I don't even know what that means. And he holds up a credit card or something. Say, ads stick with me, but I've noticed that the wrong thing about them sticks. So I just a note to the advertisement industry. Yes, the things that you say are memorable. B, they don't make me buy the product. C, sometimes they make me hate the product, you, what it stands for, and everybody who has that ailment. So I don't know that it's really doing what you want it to do. There's ads, these drug ads, that people could come on and be like a bunch of them say, we all have, you know, we all have Gilligan's disease, but this new pill, Bezentham, helps Gilligan's disease. And I'll think like, man, people with Gilligan's disease are cringe. But it's not them, you know? It's this ad, and I'm not sure if everybody even has it. I mean, you guys are actors out there. Like, are there calls? Like, do you get calls from your agent who says, we got this weird one where they want people auditioned to have Gilligan's disease, and I think you have it because you smell like coconut and salt water, and you've got that bucket hat. And you say, well, yeah, I have that. I say, could you come in and audition? There's this new little pill, and you take it, and it gets rid of a lot of the symptoms. And you'll be rid of your so-called little buddy that's been burdening you your whole life. And then you get an acting gig. And then you get turned down. Could you imagine that? You say, I got an audition because of my disease. And then they went, no. I'd be rough. That'd be tough. So there's an upside to having Gilligan's. Nope. Now, if there really is something called Gilligan's syndrome or Gilligan's disease, I apologize from the bottom of my heart. I tried to pick something that I thought was so ridiculous. But sometimes when you do that, you still hurt people. And that's the last thing I want to do. And so why do you care about hurting people you don't know? I don't poop in rivers. And the chances that I'll see that poop again are slim. But I just feel interconnected enough to the environment and to others where I just don't want to model that behavior either. Like someone, you know, downstream going, oh, there's a poo. I guess that's okay. Then what have I unleashed? You know, what have I done? You know, who let the dogs out? So I want to, you know, I don't want to promote behavior that I don't want to see in others. That feels selfish and selfless at the same time. It's not really selfless, but I'm going to say it is because I think that's noble. Or I think you think it is. So that's what I'm going to think. There's a large degree of that in performance. So let's say I'm going to do a performance on this stage, and I'm going to do some classic rolling around holding things performance art where it's clear that I'm having an emotional experience and I'm trying to express it through my physical movement, that I'm going through the environment using some very creative motion. Maybe it's dance, maybe it isn't. Maybe it's planned, maybe it isn't. But certainly something is happening in front of you. There's something to watch. And even if you think, man, that's weird and embarrassing, and I wonder if that person is being pretentious, and I wonder what their motives are. And you might be the kind of person that sits there and watch a performer and thinks that the whole time. What are they trying to do? They're trying to fool me. What's going on here? There was an animated film with Mel Brooks narrating it called The Critic. I think this is true. And it was like, you know, what's going on here? What's that supposed to be? That kind of thing. And he's saying that as this abstract cartoon is going on. And that is a voice a lot of us have when we watch, especially sort of experimental art. You know, what's this? Just feel a little challenged by it because we don't know what language they're speaking. And that is alienating. So if you go to let's say you go to a play and you go in and you sit down and they go, and you go, oh my gosh, it's gibberish. I went to the wrong theater. And you feel like you don't belong. And you look around, maybe other people get it, and you feel even more alienated. And so that happens with art sometimes, even when it's in your native tongue. Or maybe it's not. Or maybe it's something abstract. And abstract expression sometimes feels unrelatable unless you have made yourself abstract. Have you ever had the experience? Have you ever had that experience of sort of putting aside the you that you're convinced people are watching? And even if it's just Jesus and God and your granny sitting in a sort of star chamber looking at everything you do nude. So I'm saying, let's say no one is watching. And I don't mean no one is watching like you're in a room. I mean like the universe is empty, like it was when I spoke to you last week. That there's nothing out there, that you're for once. And then there's no you. You're gone too. Well, what's there? Okay, let's come back to the space, but then you're gone. You're gone.
Well, what's this thing?
I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is be the poetry instead of the poem. Be the thing that's in between, holding everything together. Be the idea of together. So, just if you're sitting in a train station right now, let's say you're sitting in the car, just imagine the car is empty. Well, not if you're driving. I don't know what to do. Let's say you're on the subway. This works best as a passenger. But let's say you're driving. Just imagine that you're a computer driving the car and just put you away for a while. And have your awareness, your wordless awareness, permeate everything around you. The car, the road, the sky, the buildings. And feel that cumulative existence for a minute. And now imagine that it's a performance, that it's a play.
Why, that's a lot.
I made up that last part. I'm making it all up. I am and I'm not. I am making it up, but I'm not. I don't want you to know. I guess that's what I'm really saying. Is I just want to keep the tension so that the expectations remain constantly in a state of fragmentation. I want to shatter them. What's this guy going to say? Is he going to give recipes? A lot of times when I hear a voice like his, he's saying things like, I got these two roosters for sale. Henry B. has them over, $5 a piece. They're good, and you can use them for all sorts of things. My goodness. What do you use roosters for? You got neighbors you don't like? Don't fight them, though. Don't put them together. Just have one of them. I have one of every aggressive thing. I have one rooster, one beta, fish. What's else? Something that's combative. I've got a real jacked kangaroo I keep in the carport. And then he stays in there, too. I think he's terrified. There's no cage or anything. And I'll be like, you all right, big guy? He said, I'm all right, like that. No worries, like that. Like, all right. But I don't think he's on. I don't think he's well. I'm glad there's nothing living in there. I have a recurring nightmare. I don't have it so much anymore, but when I've had more pets and I've just lost one, I didn't lose him. He died. I know where he went. I miss him though. My goodness. Creatures get old and their bodies wear out and it's no fun, but I don't mind when they're all worn out. But then sometimes it just gets so bad that they can't go on. And so that's all right. We all meet that fate. Oh my goodness. So it can't be bad if we're all going there. What's the largest fast food chain in the United States? Am I right? Death, oh death. It's, we're all going there, but it still sucks. That's how I feel like. But I'm going to try to understand it. But there's a wonderful thing about death is that you don't have to understand it. Ugh, that's unburdening. So I wish I could understand death. No worries. You don't have to. Why? It doesn't care. It doesn't care. And there you go. So, I just ignore it like it's an annoying child. You know, it's just trying to get your attention. You know, whatever. Oh, bless you. It's so, and yet, you know, I have that t-shirt that says, Memento Mori. And that means remember you die. I have one. Hey, I go, little bubby child ought to have one that says Memento Mima or something like that. And I don't know if there'd be a, maybe for Halloween or something. I don't know whether she's dead or not, but that'd be fun. Oh my goodness. I don't mean to give other artists ideas. I don't want to give them away. I'm going to use that myself or something, but I won't. I mostly give my ideas away because there are a lot of times they're like food or something. I've got all this venison. I got in a kind of, not in an argument with a friend, but I was again saying how, just how, well, I'm not a big venison eater or anything, but people hunt. Like, hunt something smaller is what I'm always saying. Isn't there some baby, like, tiny little thing where just you and your family can eat it? But they kill a deer, and then everybody has to go make this chili that doesn't taste as good or something. I don't know. I don't have opinions. Don't look, it's a play. You don't go to the play. You go with up the actor after and say, I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. But when you were holding your friend Yorick's skull up, I'm not sure I approve of that. Well, I got news for you. It wasn't even a real skull. And I hate that when they don't use real human remains in movies and theater. And so I'm so thankful for Poltergeist, which has real human remains. Now, they paid a terrible price for that because there was just a curse and everything, and but the realism, that's what's important, isn't it? That we terrify ourselves, and yet also that we be able to have some quality, soft focus time with Bambi. And I love that too. If you can do both, if you can live in both worlds and say, sometimes I just love to have tea with my friend Pollyanna, and we make little rainbows on the walls with prisms, me and Pollyanna, and it's lovely. And then, but I also like to get together with my dark friend, Mo, and he's always just so negative, spread out like that. I say, Mo, come on, is it that bad? And, you know, he calls me all sorts of chrome dome, is one. Ugh, it's so hurtful. And yes, I'm bald. Big deal. You know, I think I look all right. Not all right, but I think I look like a human. A lot of them are bald. People used to be even more bald. I've seen pictures. There was a, if you go to not Capistrano, but one of those places where in Italy, northern Italy, and they've got a monastery, and all the monks are hanging on the wall, all the mummified. And almost none of them have hair or skin. But I don't see any hair. I don't know if it would still be there. Maybe they did in life. Now I'm making. And also, monks shave their heads. Now that I'm thinking about it, that's a really bad comparison. This play is called The Monkey's Hair. The Monk's E-Paw. It's an internet thing. And a lot of people think I'm saying monkey's paw, but I'm not. So it's a totally different thing. If you'd like to audition for it, I'd like to hear you out. Here's what I want you to do to audition for my performance art play. It's really just a state of mind I want to see if you can get yourself into. And it's a freeing one. It's a one where you've stopped caring a little. It's a free yourself of having to make conclusions or judgments all the time. Every time that we are exposed to media or something or on the internet, there is this very, very strong push to have an opinion, to be a critic about everything. You just saw that movie. What worked and didn't work. You know what I mean? food, how does the mouth feel? And you were also expected to have the vocabulary of a critic where you can just describe in excruciating detail why or why you not didn't like it not. Now, when you do that in writing, you can go back and clean that sentence up. But why do we feel like we have to do that? Or why even change the channel? I remember as a kid often, I don't remember, we didn't have a channel changer for a while. So if I was like sitting across the room and the TV was on and I was kind of doing something, it stayed on and it didn't get changed. No matter what ad came on or what show, it just played. And being free from having to judge things and cut them off and just to see a lot of different things in their entirety and equally, I believe that I conditioned myself to see the world in a more even way, in a way that didn't put myself and my desires at the center of it necessarily. More like a true spectator, like a bird, like a spirit, and not like someone who's being sold something. And that's what the criticism is for. You see, it's product feedback. You're being tricked into filling out a comment card. Every day and everything you write on the internet is a comment card for a product. And you volunteer what you like about it and don't like about it, what you want more of and less of in life, in friendships, in art, in everything. And then a machine reads the comment cards and adjusts, and everything is made just the way you said you wanted it. And you think, well, I don't know. I'm not an expert. You ask me my opinion, and I don't know what's good and what's bad, and I don't know to see. That's the thing. Don't make me the judge. I don't want to be judge. If I walked into a small western town and they said, "We're so glad to meet you, stranger. We're looking for a sheriff or a judge." I go, "No, no, no. I've seen this episode. No, thank you. I'm not going to be the target. I don't trust myself. I don't have any qualifications to do this." And I feel that way largely about lots of things. So when I listen to music, I don't imagine myself a little record executive or some type of magazine critic in the 50s. I wonder who these cats are. Gonna write some liner notes based on what these cats are playing. Hey, they're playing out. I love this. This new cat, I wish I could think of another name, his style. So like that, and you got to come up with a bunch of new ways of saying something. Like, I like it. Can't you say you like it? So you're voting for everything. But you're not voting right now by listening to me. Nobody cares or knows. There is no machine hooked up to you that can tell what you're listening to. There is no counter at the radio station that flips over every time somebody tunes in. It could be one person, zero people, thousands, hundreds. No way of knowing. You know, online, yes, I do know how many people listen to archived episodes. Are you listening to mine enough? No, no, it can't ever be enough, but you should. But I do know how many people listen to a show online. Again, it's more, it's, how many is that? It's not in the thousands. It's sometimes in the dozens and hundreds. And I just think that I could do hundreds of thousands of times more than that. So I'm going to try harder. From now on, I'm making a new year's resolution, and it was just Rosh Hashanah. Rosh means head. Hashanah means master, headmaster. And why is it New Year? I don't know, man. Maybe the year. Maybe. I don't know. It's just, I don't. Ancient languages. I haven't used them for thousands of years. I spoke them when they came out. That's the thing. People ask me things about Twin Peaks. I go, I don't know if you know how long it's been since I've seen it. I know there's a town or something. No, my goodness, I've watched it again and again and again. Yes, sir. Same thing with any kind of religious studies. They right there. You can't get away from them. If you let the internet you know you like something, it's going to give it to you every day. I hope they're giving you me every day. I can't take a steady dose of Hardy. I don't want you to. Oh, my gosh, if I imagine myself something, and I want to be the most beautiful piece of cake or profiterole that's like 1,000 calories of joy, then no, I don't want you to eat that every day. That's a special treat. I'm a special treat, maybe. And am I thinking too highly of myself? Well, why would I think lowly of myself if I'm presenting myself to you as a gift? So I'm going to talk it up. Yes, this is priceless. My goodness. I'm not going to devalue something I'm bringing to you. I'm going to give you a reason to like it and think it's of a value. I want to give you things that I see are not being freely enough given. Or if they are, you know, sometimes very important information they charge you for. And even if they say they're not charging, you go, well, why is the thing you're in monetized?
Well, people give money to FMU.
Yes. But that's just keeping WFMU is my iron lung. So that's the thing. It's just that we're working here together in many ways. Could I exist without it? Probably not. Could not breathe. And could it exist without me? Yes, someone else will go in the iron lung and their head will stick out and I'll have a really good show. So, but I tell you what, I'm going to personalize it. There's stickers all over the inside now, and I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. So that's, they amuse, I can't see them. I realize that my head's outside of it, of FMU. I don't know what you're talking about. You do, though. I know you do. That's the whole idea of making yourself the performer. You understand what I'm saying. I'm saying you don't have to make sense. You don't have to have an opinion. You don't have to be anybody. You can let go of yourself completely. You don't have to perform. And you most certainly don't have to do a performance that anybody has any expectations about. You don't have to act. You can just move. You don't have to act. You can just say things. And they don't have to be right. And they don't have to be justified necessarily. But just don't say them to anybody, I guess is one of the caveats there. Oh, I bless you. I wish you so much good. It only benefits us all for you to be peaceful and full of love. Everybody, it doesn't cost me anything to wish and pray everyone have love and healing in their lives. It only makes my life better. Boy, I want to go to the fair where everybody is content and have self-respect. I want to dwell in that world. Y'all love yourself. Give yourself self-respect. Find the dignity and self-annihilation and be present in the world. And we will live together, and it'll just be, there'll be less litter. And that's just, the thing goes on with it. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York. And online, WFMU.org, worldwide freeform radio, the way that it was freely formed when it was formed freely when radio was invented. And I want you to stay tuned for Mahogany next. And you are beautiful people, and I love you.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Today, October is come, breezing like a Harley D down that spiraling thoroughfare we call time. The Hellraiser in its sidecar, palms outstretched in the crisp autumn air, careening into the ever earlier sunset. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. Enter. https://wfmu.org into your browser's query field. That's correct. A listener just like yourself can use an internet just like your own to sustain this 24-hour transmission. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words pledge now. From there I will leave it to the spirit to guide you. Dearest listener, my dear generous intelligent listener, October is come. October is come. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Donate today. October is come. Breezing like a Harley D down that spiraling thoroughfare we call time. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Palms outstretched in the crisp autumn air, careening into the ever-earlier sunset. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. Enter. https://wfmu.org. Into your browser's query field. That's correct. A listener just like yourself can use an internet just like your own to sustain this 24-hour transmission. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words.